From the Southeast Asian capital city of the Philippines, Manila, good day, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever the case may be, wherever you are, I'm Art Bell, filling in for George Norrie, who is taking a well-deserved night off. My God, if you'd ever done 5 or 6 nights of talk radio a week, you would understand how much occasionally you need a little time off. So I am here to fill in for George tonight. Now, I've got a few things that I want to cover before we get to our first hour guest. We can play pretty fast and loose here because we've got open lines after Roy Spencer. He's going to be here talking about our climate. So just a few things I want to cover. Number one, my webcam photograph tonight is an interesting one indeed, at least for me and perhaps for some U.S. amateur radio operator. You know, I'm a ham radio operator, and as you can see, by the way, my webcam is in a different place. You'll see at the top of the website, coastcoastam.com, it says Art's webcam. It's usually over on the left-hand side. Right now, tonight, they stuck it at the top. Now, that is my lifetime membership in something called PARA, the Philippine Amateur Radio Association. And I hope that's what you're getting. That's not what I'm getting, but I hope that's what you're getting. That's what I put up there. Now, as you can see, I am DU1W6OBB. How about that? Pretty cool. I'm very proud of that. So, licensed by reciprocal agreement now to operate here in the Philippines. Next step, put up an antenna. Easier said than done. We're on the 19th floor. It's just one floor from the roof of a building here. And speaking of the 19th floor, last night, oh, I forget the time, but it was pretty late, you know, 1 o'clock or 1:30 in the morning or 2 o'clock, something like that. Anyway, we had an earthquake. Now, it rocked and rolled. This was about only a 5.6, something like that, about 90 miles south of Manila, but on the 19th floor of the building. Now, they even felt it down on the main floor, but up here on the 19th floor, it was kind of like an amusement park ride. The building, of course, is modern and meant to withstand that sort of thing, but it still had the amusement ride kind of feeling to it, if you follow me. The back and forth, you know, we're 200 feet in the air, swaying back and forth. Isn't this fun? Aaron came running in and said, oh, my God. And I said, no, it's just an earthquake. It'll be all right. And it took a while to settle down, and we rocked back and forth for a while. So there you have it. Here's something I want to cover. This is very important, unbelievable. The internet hoax, the horrible hate, the Filipino hate letter that has circled the world more times than commercial airliners put together, has once again circled the world, but unfortunately, and here's where I'm going to need your help. As you can see by clicking on it, the damnedest thing has happened. It seems as though another newspaper here in the Philippines, has decided to just pluck this article off the internet and print it in their newspaper. This is dated, where's the date? October 18th. So just a couple of days ago, this was printed in the Bohol Chronicle, B-O-H-O-L Chronicle. And you can read this hate letter. Of course, I did not write it. Now, there is something you can do for me. If you'll note at the bottom of this horrid little piece of garbage that somebody wrote, and by the way, just a little history. This years ago was traced by the FBI to somebody who sent it from a computer at UCSD, the University of California at San Diego campus. Somebody went into the library at many years ago and sent it out under my name. And it's gone around the world a million times. And now this newspaper has decided to the Philippine Inquirer, which was the big national newspaper here in Manila, did that years ago, picked it up and just published it without checking anything. If they'd gone to Google and put in Philippine hate letter or letter and Art Bell, they would have known it was false. If they'd gone to my website, they would have known it was false. If they'd done almost any checking at all anywhere, they would have known it was false. But no, they just plucked it off the internet and printed it as though it were truth. Now, we have demanded a retraction. But in the meantime, at the bottom of this horrid little letter, just printed, you can check the date yourself, there is an opportunity for people to give feedback to the journalist who wrote this. And I would dearly love it if you would make your way to coasttocoastam.com, click on this, and then give them some feedback. Oh, please give them some feedback. I am so sick of this. It is so dangerous for me and for my family to have this sort of thing running around in the first place. But now to have it in print in a newspaper here in the Philippines once again is so incredibly dangerous that, I just hope you will take a moment and go up there and give them some feedback. I'll leave that to you. So there you have it. That's up at the top of the website. You'll find it very quickly. And then if you click on the second link provided, why, you'll see the entire history of the letter. But the first link is, just the their website portion of the newspaper, and fortunately they did allow for feedback. So you just put in your name and email address and do me a favor and give them some feedback. We are going to have a first hour. I can play a little fast and loose with time here because we're going to have open lines. And by the way, when we do go to open lines later, we're going to have a specific topic we're going to deal with. Do you realize that the world appears to be on the verge of optical invisibility? I'm sure many of you have read the article on the website. If not, I will certainly recite it for you when we get to it. But I thought we might have some fun tonight with open lines. Invisibility has always been something I've loved. In fact, I just read a very old book by H.F. Saint, which was turned into a movie with Chevy Chase and Daryl Hannah. Remember that? The Invisible Man. If you ever get an opportunity, to get hold of the book, the movie was okay. The book was awesome. Absolutely awesome. And I just had reread this, and all of a sudden, here comes this article about optical invisibility. So we might actually have the opportunity to become invisible. So when we talk in open lines a little later, I would like to know what it is that you would like to do should you be given the opportunity to become invisible. Anyway, we'll get to that later. Looking quickly at the news, President Bush says, I won't change strategy in Iraq. President Bush conceded Friday that right now it's tough for American forces in Iraq, but the White House said he would not change U.S. strategy in the face of pre-election polls that show voters are, upset. My thinking was it wouldn't be a hell of a much of a policy, would it, if he changed it just for the election? North Korea showed signs Friday that it could be backing away from its nuclear showdown with the world. Even staged a show of domestic support in Pyongyang. Tens of thousands gathered, and Kim Jong apologized. He said, sorry. When it comes to nuclear detonations, sorry, I don't know, just doesn't seem like it does it. Nuclear detonations and sorry, they don't go together, I don't think. And then this, Rumsfeld, Iraq must take over security. The Iraqi government is going to have to take over its country's security sooner rather than later, according to our defense secretary. Now, that sure sounds like Vietnamization of the war to me. I'll get a lot of hate mail because I say that. People can't figure me out. I am neither It depends on the issue. Sometimes I'm pro-administration. Sometimes I'm very anti-administration. And, you know, in this case, on the one hand, we're not changing policy because of the elections. On the other hand, we're talking about getting out, you know, turning it over to the Iraqis, the Iraqization of the war. Then one more little item here before we go to break and then our guest. Global warming study predicts wild ride. This is in the AP National News. The world, especially the Western United States, the Mediterranean region, and Brazil will likely suffer more extended droughts, heavy rainfalls, and longer heat waves over the next century because of global warming, according to a new study. So I've got a guest coming up on climate in a moment, whose name is Roy Spencer, no minor functionary in this area. Roy Spencer, in fact, is a principal research scientist at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. He has been senior scientist for climate studies at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. Directs research into the development and application of satellite passive microwave remote sensing techniques for measuring global temperature, water vapor, and precipitation. Dr. Spencer is the recipient of NASA's Medal for Exceptional Scientific Achievement and the American Meteorological Society's Special Award for his satellite-based temperature monitoring work. He is the author of numerous scientific articles that have appeared in Science, Nature, Journal of Climate, Monthly Weather Review, Journal of Atmospheric and Oceanic Technology, Journal of Climate and Applied Meteorology, Remote Sensing, that's not like remote viewing, by the way, reviews, Advances in Space Research, and Climate Change. Dr. Spencer received his PhD in meteorology from the University of Wisconsin in 1981. We will speak with him in a moment. Well, I sure like this title in the AP News this hour. Global warming study predicts wild ride. Dr. Spencer, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Art. Glad to be with you.
If I remember correctly, you and your boss disagree on some minor points with regard to where the climate is going, but in general, you agree. Is that fair?
Well, I think it's safe to say that virtually everyone in this business, including us so-called skeptics, believe there is global warming. I know lately Al Gore has taken to calling us global warming deniers, but global warming skeptics don't deny global warming. We just deny the source of it. We aren't convinced that mankind is totally responsible for it, or maybe even half responsible for it.
Well, I don't know if it matters.
Well,
I think that was my point to you the last time we spoke. I mean, what's the diff? Whether we're doing it or whether it's a natural cycle, the implications of it on humanity, since everybody almost now agrees it's real, we ought to be concentrating on that.
Well, there's no question that we ought to be concentrating on adaptation to some extent because, you know, we need to be prepared for it, like you said, in either event. It just is that if it's natural, it's just as likely that it'll start cooling again based on past climate history, whereas if it's man-made, then, you know, we keep pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and that's going to continue for many decades, and things will just keep getting worse. So I guess I see more of a distinction for the importance of whether it's natural, man-made, than you do.
Okay, fair enough. But even if we're just contributing, certainly at some level, we're contributing to gases in the atmosphere. I don't think anybody could really honestly argue we're not, could they?
No. I like to say, it's kind of hard for the Earth to not know that there's 6 billion people living here.
Yeah, exactly. And we are putting gases into the atmosphere. Now, we can argue until we're blue in the face about how much effect that's having. One thing we can see is that, for example, at the North Pole, most of the ice appears to be going away. And, in fact, we're going to be able to navigate the North Pole pretty soon here with a ship. In fact, maybe even now.
Well, the warmest temperature anomalies anywhere on Earth right now are at the North Pole, and that's something that our satellite data shows, as well as the surface thermometer data, that the amount of warming we've seen in, let's say, in the last 30 years or the last 50 years mm-hmm. is greater at the North Pole than any place else.
Why is that?
Well, no one knows for sure. I mean, if you believe what I call the global warming alarmists, it's mankind putting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Now, the surface thermometer data that we have in the past suggests that the 1930s were just as warm around the North Pole. And, of course, back then, we really didn't know how much sea ice there was up there because there weren't that many people to get around. And, of course, we didn't have the satellites. By the way, I'm head of a NASA team of scientists, one of which does that ice monitoring work with instruments on Earth orbiting satellites.
Why do you think that Dr. Hansen, who's the top guy at NASA, is so alarmed?
Jim Hansen, I understand where he's coming from. For one thing, he's a climate modeler. You know, he puts the physics of the climate system into a computer model and tries to predict the future. Hmm. Well, he's done a pretty good job of explaining climate variations over the last century, warming up until about 1940, then some cooling until the 70s, and then warming since then. The trouble is a lot of us believe what he's been doing is an exercise in curve fitting. Since we don't understand natural climate variations, what we do understand is that we're putting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The theoretical basis for global warming is reasonably well understood. And so everybody tends to interpret what the climate system is doing in terms of man-caused activity. So, you know, to sum it up, he has come up with an explanation for the current warmth that is entirely based on man-produced pollutants. Now, I would say that, yes, that is one possible explanation, but there are also other possible explanations, for instance, a change in cloudiness.
Cloudiness?
Yeah, hard to believe, but clouds actually affect the average temperature of the Earth.
Oh, it's not hard to believe at all. Now, how much effect does the ocean have on our weather? My answer as a, you know, pedestrian would be quite a bit.
It's a huge effect because the oceans can store at least 1,000 times more heat than the atmosphere can. So what they do is they tend to moderate climate influences. You know, if there's a warming tendency for the Earth, the oceans will absorb a lot of that heat and lead to very little warming. But the flip side of it is they can store so much heat that a small change in ocean circulation, just due to the chaotic behavior of the ocean, can lead to climate change. And that's something we have very little understanding of.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that's disturbed me, and this could well be out of your field of expertise, but I guess it would relate to it. There's an article saying that they're now counting about 200 of what they call dead zones in the ocean. That is to say, where no animals, no fish, no, you know, nothing above microbial size lives. It's just all dead. Dead zones in the ocean. Now, on the face of it, that seems possibly worrisome.
Well, of course, as a scientist, the first thing I would ask is, how do we know they weren't dead before? And if we do know they're caused by mankind, how big are they? Is it something we can live with? I mean, after all, humans produce pollution. We can spend some of our wealth to clean up after ourselves to some extent, but it is impossible to not pollute. So at some point, you have to decide how much trouble are we going to go to fix something? Are we all going to go back to living in caves to minimize our influence on the environment?
No.
I don't think so.
No, of course we're not. However, that leads to another sort of discussion we could have, and that is the muzzling of a lot of climate scientists. I just wonder about that, including the big man there at NASA. An awful lot of articles have been muzzled. I mean, a lot of scientists have been muzzled. Hold tight where you are, Doctor. We're at the bottom of the hour.
Okay.
But that worries me. Even the people that I know that Dr. Spencer, to some degree, or perhaps even a great degree, disagrees with, they've been muzzled. And you've got to wonder why. And the only answer I've been able to come up with is because, well, somebody's figured out we can't do a damn thing about it anyway, so why alarm all of you? I'm Art Bell. My guest is Dr. Roy Spencer. He's principal research scientist at the University of Alabama in Huntsville, has been the senior scientist for climate studies at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center. And so he's obviously quite a guy to have on. I just wanted to get this in before the break, and then we'll get his reaction to it. This is not Dr. Hansen, who's complained bitterly about being censored, but instead scientists at a world-renowned climate research lab in New Jersey say their discoveries are being hidden from public view because their conclusions on global warming differ from those in the Bush administration. The scientists, part of the research staff of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, say a spate of press releases, as well as a position paper reviewing various studies on the risks of global warming, have been quashed, by officials of the Commerce Department. The researchers work at the Geophysical Fluid Dynamics Laboratory in Plainsboro, a small branch of NOAA, and the birthplace of the technique that uses computer models to forecast climate. They say the press releases and the position paper detailed reports linking intensified hurricanes to global warming. The reports also predict spells of intense weather like droughts, floods, and paint some warnings as irreversible. What can I tell you, the scientists say? We're simply telling them something they don't want to hear. That came from Richard Weatherade. That's an interesting name, a career scientist at the federally funded center. But the public is not being informed when these things are zapped. In a moment, we'll get the doctor's reaction to that. Welcome back. Perhaps you would like to. Now, that's not Dr. Hansen making that comment. That's some other researchers back east. And just as a general principle, I wonder how you feel about these reports and so forth and so on being squished.
Well, I do have some opinions on this since I worked for NASA for 14 years. I would say that all things considered, scientists within the agencies, government agencies that do global warming research, actually have very little to worry about being muzzled, mostly because these organizations, especially NOAA and NASA, in order to keep getting funding from Congress to study the global warming problem, there has to be a global warming problem. So typically what I've found is that agency administrators in Washington will tend to spin things to make global warming look worse. Now, the people you referred to that were supposedly muzzled at GFDL, a modeling group up there, they've published their results in Nature magazine. I don't know specifically what happened in this instance. I know with Jim Hansen, the media made a much bigger deal out of the thing than they should have, because when I worked for NASA, I was told before doing congressional testimony to stick to my area of expertise and don't get drawn into policy issues. Well, that's because they knew that my policy views did not help NASA sell its programs to Congress. Now, Jim Hansen, you've heard lately, you know, in the last year or so, claimed he was muzzled. Well, he had gotten used to saying whatever he wanted to say. And I think what happened there is the administration just reminded NASA to enforce its own rules. And its own rules are that we are not supposed to talk to the media unless we go through our management chain first. And in fact, that's one reason why I resigned NASA 4 years ago, was I just got tired of the constraints. So now I'm with the university and I can pretty much say whatever I want to, and here I am on your show.
Well, that's true. But as you point out, no longer with NASA. Now, if you were still with NASA, somehow I just don't think you'd be here tonight.
That's true.
So it's not just Jim Hansen, though, Dr. Hansen, making these remarks about being censored. This is an entirely different group. And, you know, they're claiming here, I could read on, but they're claiming they were denied the ability to do interviews. They simply were not allowed to do interviews and talk about their findings.
Well, again, I don't have the specifics of this case. I can say that their bosses, you know, these people do have bosses that can tell them what they can and can't do. Okay,
sure.
And I was in that position too. I don't know what the reasons are, why they were denied, you know, being able to talk to the media. But I do think that to the extent that anyone is being muzzled, that that is a mistake. I mean, when an agency puts pressure on its scientists to say something or to not say something, that's a bad thing because people...
Well, yeah, it's a mistake because it makes us think the worst.
That's right. Absolutely right. And it's just bad PR.
All right. And what about this? I've tried to consider why the administration or the powers that be, if you want to just look at it that way, don't want this talked about. And one of the possibilities... One of the darker possibilities, it's my job to consider the darker possibilities, is that really this is happening, whether it be man-made or just cyclic, whatever. It is happening, and it potentially is really bad, and there's not a damn thing anybody can do about it. So there's no point in turning the economy upside down, going back to bicycles or whatever they would have us do, because it's going to happen anyway, so why bother to shake people up?
Well, that is a very important point, and most people don't realize something that you just said that I think too many people don't understand, which is that even if we decide that global warming is going to be very serious, let's say it's all due to mankind, there's no way to turn it around in the coming few decades because mankind depends on fossil fuels so much. Conservation isn't going to help. Hybrid cars are not going to help. Compact fluorescent bulbs are not going to help. If we start embracing nuclear power again, that could alleviate some of the problem. But what we need is new energy technology. That's the only thing that's going to solve the problem. And that's where I really get upset with, you know, playing around with things like the Kyoto Protocol or the McCain-Lieberman bill. These are just efforts where bureaucrats can pat themselves on the back and say they did something for the environment or the planet when in fact they're doing virtually nothing.
All right, let's take a moment and talk about real alternatives. Now, is it legitimate to complain that the administration, this and others, and none of them have really gone that far. Some have been better than others from the point of view of environmentalists, I suppose, but basically, none of them have really gone whole hog to try and get a major change that actually would have some effect. We all know we have energy problems. What do you think? Do you think that there's any chance?
There's a few things that are operating here. First of all is that we live with a free market economy. When we try to change things, the way things operate with government-mandated policies, it usually turns out bad. Things usually turn out the best if we let the people decide through their decisions of what to buy and sell. That's usually the best for the economy, almost always the best for the economy. Now, that being said, the government is already investing billions of dollars, billions of your dollars, into new energy technologies, research into new technologies. And that's what we should be doing. Environmentalists make it sound like we're not doing anything. Well, we are. We're, in fact, putting a lot of money into the only place where the solution is going to be found, which is new technology. So, you know, I think the future actually looks more rosy. I mean, it starts to feel like Paul Ehrlich and his population bomb, you know, that by now most of humanity was supposed to have starved and all that. But mankind is amazingly resilient. As Julian Simon used to say, the greatest natural resource this planet has is the human mind. And we're going to fix problems as they arise.
Doctor, what do you see? Make me feel rosy for a moment. What do you see on the horizon that really has a possibility of making the kind of change that we both know we need?
Well, so far, there isn't, that I can tell, there isn't any kind of magic, you know, silver bullet on the horizon. Nuclear, as I said, would help. There's so-called clean coal technology. There's actually a couple of test plants generating electricity from coal and actually storing or sequestering the carbon dioxide that's produced and pumping it deep into the ground. So that's one possibility, is this clean coal technology, which would be great for the U.S. because we have a lot of coal reserves.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So there are some possibilities. You've heard of the hydrogen economy, having fuel cell cars that run on hydrogen.
It never made sense to me, though. In other words, you can store hydrogen and then use that as fuel, but you need energy to create the hydrogen, and then you need the economy to store and distribute the hydrogen, and by the time you're all said and done, I don't know how much you've really done in terms of real change.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Art.
Really, yeah.
That's very true. Most people don't realize we don't have a source of hydrogen. It takes energy to generate it. I think the way it might work well is if we used a lot of nuclear power, which is supposedly a lot safer these days, but let's not get into that. If we used nuclear power and then relied on the electricity to generate hydrogen, then we've alleviated that much more dependence on fossil fuels because we're now using electricity to power our cars.
Well, that's certainly true, but the politics of nuclear energy development are just really pathetic, and I'm sure you don't think we're going to have very many new plants begin construction anytime soon.
Well, no, but we do have existing plants that can be brought back online, and where I live, part of our power is nuclear. Of course, you know, if we look to the French, you know, the 70-80% of their electricity is nuclear. I think nuclear has gotten a really undeserved black eye. You know, coal kills a lot of people. Black lung disease, mining disasters. There were no nuclear power plant deaths until Chernobyl.
Well, and that's certainly true. Now, the only sort of kink in the whole idea of nuclear power plants sprouting up all over the place would be this damn terrorism business. I think nuclear plants, particularly as we make them in the United States and the Western world, are just fine. Unless you consider somebody who actually wants to damage one and has the means to do so. In other words, willful damage.
Right, yeah, and I'm not an expert in that risk and how well that risk can be mitigated. I do know that most of the nuclear waste from spent fuel has been stored in the containment buildings that the reactors are actually in. And those containment buildings, you know, they're kind of dome-shaped concrete structures. I'm told that those are supposed to be able to withstand a direct hit from a jet aircraft flying directly into it. Between that and just security, the heavy security around these areas, it seems like that's a problem that could be pretty much solved. But, you know, we live in a risk-adverse society, don't we? I mean, everyone is trying to avoid risk without ever talking about benefits.
It is true. It is absolutely true. And God knows we need energy, and we need cheap energy, and our economy depends on that. People don't understand how closely energy is tied to all the rest of the economy and the price of almost everything. And by the way, it is notably interesting to me that the closer the election gets, the cheaper oil seems to be. Now, that could be a gigantic coincidence, I suppose. But it always happens. Every time we get near an election, the price of oil falls. Do you notice that?
Well, oil is a global commodity. You know, its price is controlled by supply, demand, speculators that are speculating on future supplies, you know, whether there's trouble in the Middle East that might prevent supplies in the future. Nobody has control over the price of oil. I mean, I understand a lot of people think that the administration does or whoever, but no one does. It's all of humanity that has the control over price of oil. Well, as well as OPEC, you know, if they decide to cut back production, price is going to go back up.
Theoretically, I could not agree with you more. It's a big world spot market, and the price is the price is the price. But amazingly, I mean, it is an amazing coincidence that every time we have an election coming close, the price of oil does drop.
I had never heard that before, Art. Maybe you're right.
It is so. It's amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. I mean, it is, it's dropping right now.
Yes, yeah, it's been dropping, yeah. Although I saw that OPEC just decided to cut production. So, that's going to push prices back up to some extent, I would think.
Probably after the election, though.
Okay.
I mean, it really is amazing the way it works. And I fully understand the market mechanics and how impossible what I'm saying really is. And yet it is happening. It has happened before. Well, anyway, if Dr. Hansen is correct, let's do this. If you're wrong about the ice, for example, at the North Pole, you're suggesting that, well, perhaps the ice comes and goes cyclically at the North Pole. But if you're wrong on that, and in fact the North Pole is melting as it never has melted before, and none of us knows what's true here, but if that should be true, then what would that mean for us?
Well, the concern about the North Polar sea ice cover is that as it melts, since ice, especially snow-covered ice, reflects sunlight, the more ice melts, the more sunlight comes in. That's called a positive feedback. If there's a little bit of warming that causes the ice to melt, the ice melting is a positive feedback which amplifies the warming because the ice was, when it was there, was reflecting sunlight back to outer space. So there is concern that if it did melt, that the polar region could warm even faster. I'm using your premise that I'm wrong, and that we are responsible for global warming, and that this trend is going to continue.
Well, it's probably at least a 50-50 bet, since neither one of us has the ability to look back, and we didn't have satellites to know if it ever happened before. So, it's kind of like 50-50, I would think, wouldn't you?
Well, now let me make a big picture comment.
Sure.
The climate system, weather, every drop of rain that falls, every gust of wind, are all acting as part of one huge process that is constantly trying to move heat from where there's too much to where there isn't enough. The atmosphere and the ocean are gigantic heat engines, and what they do best is find a way to get rid of excess heat. It is my belief that we aren't going to see much climate change due to whatever, because I believe that is fundamentally a stabilizing mechanism on the climate. Now, some people point to, then how did we get the ice ages? I'm not sure that we have much of a clue at all what caused the ice ages. And I did say earlier in the show that chaotic changes in the climate system are possible. But, given, like you said, if it's going to happen, if there is the possibility, the best thing mankind can do is be ready for it. so that we can adapt to it.
Boy, am I ever in favor of that. All right, well, listen, Doctor, I'm not going to hold you. We've got open lines coming up, but I really, really appreciate your joining us in the first hour. And we will soon have you back to do an entire program. How's that?
That sounds fine, Art.
All right. Dr. Roy Spencer, thank you very much, and you have a wonderful night. We're going to move toward open lines. It's a Friday night, Saturday morning across North America. The sun is well down. It's good and dark. It's a good night for that kind of thing. And you know what? We're going to talk, along with open lines, a little bit about what you would do if you were invisible. I'm Art Bell.